The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to WVUD's Campus Voices, weekly conversations with interesting members of the university community, visitors to campus, and others engaged in thought-provoking research and community service. Stay tuned for Campus Voices on WVUD.
I'm Richard Gordon, along with intern Julia Ciambastiani, and we're up in the old college gallery, in the side gallery, talking with Ashley Rykopek and Carly Wurzelbacher about the exhibition American Graphic, Picturing Social Change in the 1920s and 1930s. Ashley, why don't you tell us a little bit about the whole University Museums program?
Sure. So all of the events at University Museums are free and open to the public. You can walk in during our open hours, and there are gallery attendants there who will answer questions if you have them or things like that. So we're open from Wednesday to Sunday. Wednesday we have late hours, so we open at noon and are open until 8 p.m. And then Thursday through Sunday we're open from 12 to 5.
And Carly, what the heck made you interested in this particular topic, these prints and photographs from the 1920s and 1930s?
So I am a PhD candidate at Delaware, and I study American modernism. So this is in my time period and within my specialty. And so Janice Tomlinson, who is the director of the museums and also the university special collections, invited me to put together a show drawn from the permanent collection of work made in America in the 1920s and 30s. So that's where we started.
Now, a lot of this work that's in here has a social theme, obviously.
It does, and so that is one of the principal themes that I was thinking about when I was looking through the collection to decide what would be on view. So one of the things I was asking myself was, how does each of these objects speak to the changing moment of American life in the 1920s and 30s? How are they responding to different situations, socially, politically, economically? And that was one of my criteria when I was developing the checklist. And most of the work on view is from the late 20s and then the 1930s, so after the Great Depression and during the time of President Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal relief and recovery program.
Before we walked in, you and I were talking about the federal agencies that often funded artists back in the 20s and 30s and early 40s.
Yes, and so sometimes people refer to this as the alphabet soup. So there is the Federal Art Project, the FAP, and within that is the Works Progress Administration, and later changed to the Works Projects Administration to make it even more confusing. But this agency provided work for artists, and so it's a unique time in American history where art makers are considered workers just like everyone else who deserve and need to make a living. And in addition to the WPA, there was another agency called the FSA, the Farm Security Administration. And those people were photographers. And so we have some of their work on view in the gallery, as well as the work of people who worked for the WPA.
Right over there, one of the first things that people see is an iconic picture by Dorothea Lange. Let's go take a look.
Yes, so this is, as you say, an iconic photo of the title is Migrant Mother. This is a person who is working as a pea picker at this time in California, but someone who would move to different farms and pick whatever crop was ripe at that time. And so we see her looking very concerned with her brow furrowed, and she's looking with uncertainty into the distance, and she's holding a baby in her lap, and she has two other children kind of leaning on her. So we really get the sense that her family and her young children are dependent upon the work that she's doing, and she's in this precarious position.
part of what's so fascinating about this artwork is that we know this woman's name today. Her name was Florence Owens Thompson, but no one refers to her as that. She's become this iconic figure of the mother who's suffering during the period of the Great Depression, and you really see that in her face. I think it's part of what makes this a really striking photograph, but also one of the best known images from this time period. And people walk into the gallery and immediately see that and then wonder, where have I seen this? I know I've seen that before. And it really is a testament to, I think, how skillful of a photographer Dorothea Lange was, but also how powerful this symbol of a woman who's, you know, been suffering, who's sort of holding her children, really is.
One of the things I've always thought is really interesting about the photography of that period, and you can see it on this wall, is that you got a lot of pictures of people doing the work. I mean, the one next to it is somebody in a factory, and then you've got the people out in the cotton fields, and it looks like a cotton picker there on the far end of the wall.
Yes, and that's what's interesting about the FSA, is that these photographers traveled throughout the country, and that was their job, was to record living and working conditions and to report back to Washington so that people in D.C. knew what was happening throughout the country and could then formulate policies to alleviate some of these problems during the Great Depression and during the Dust Bowl. So in the gallery, we have the migrant mother in California. We see a photo of a steelworker in Pennsylvania. We have a farmhand in Ohio. And that's something unique, again, in the history of American art, that this work is being made throughout the country. It's not concentrated in these urban art world centers.
Well, so you said something really interesting that's different from what most of us today, and Julia probably thinks this too, is like, you know, art for art's sake. I mean, this was really getting the photographers to document things for the policymakers too.
Yes, and so these images were shown to lawmakers in D.C. They also appeared in popular magazines like Look magazine. And this program and the FSA photographers, it was conceived of as introducing America to Americans. So these images circulated widely. Millions of people saw them, and they had a real tangible impact on these policies. They did shape public policy and public opinion.
I think you have a couple of pictures that Walker Evans took that are in the university's collection in here as well, right? Should we go look at those?
Let's, yeah.
Did Americans understand that this was going on throughout the country? Like, did in urban areas, was the rest of America aware of it before these publications and these photographs were published?
I would say not to the extent that these images made visible. This is a time in American history where a lot of people aren't doing agricultural work anymore. A lot of people don't have any farm experience. Maybe they've lived their whole life in Chicago or New York City, and they don't know. I think people in urban areas tend to idealize what's happening in the countryside. And there was this sense that maybe people not living in urban centers, maybe the Great Depression didn't affect them as much because they still had fresh air and they were outside and they weren't overcrowded. But that wasn't the case, and that's what these images made visible.
So which of these are the Walker Evans pictures we were going to look at? They're both urban scenes, aren't they?
They are, and then we have one behind us here, the Country Store near Moundville, Alabama. And so this is a great image because we can see all of the signage and advertising collaged across the facade of this building. And then we do see these two family workers housing, and this is nearby in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And then in Atlanta, this is really a great image because we see two homes, but in front of them is this wall of billboards advertising movies. And so it's a really great kind of document of the period to see what's going on in the theater at this time too.
One of the movies that's being advertised, walk over here, which is the sort of advertisement on the left here, a film that starred Carol Lombard, Love Before Breakfast, is one of those sort of classic escapist films of the time period. So she's a sort of rich socialite, and it's the problems that her rich fiance and his even richer boss have during this time period. So that contrast between the story that's being presented in the film that's advertised and the story that, you know, the people who lived in those houses would have experienced in their day-to-day life would have obviously been very different.
So there's debate about whether scholars have tried to decide, are these abandoned buildings? Are people living there? And so in the house on the left, we do see curtains in the window, and it does seem like at least that structure is being inhabited.
We're in the Old College Gallery here on the University of Delaware campus with Ashley Reichopek, the Curator of Education in University Museums, and with Carly Wurzelbacher, a PhD candidate in the Department of Art History. And we're going through the exhibition that Carly has curated called American Graphic, Picturing Social Change in the 1920s and the 1930s. Now to hear us so far, Carly, you'd swear this was nothing but photographs.
Yes, so we have a lot of prints on view as well. So part of the WPA artists were making murals, they were making easel paintings, they were also making prints. And so a lot of what we have in the gallery are lithographs. And the way I've tried to organize the lithographs on view is to group together the work that is very overtly political, and that's what we see over here. And then there are other printmakers who are very concerned with what's going on politically and socially and economically, but don't want to show that so directly in their images. They want to reach a wide audience, and they want to use things like humor and satire. So they don't necessarily want to adopt as subject matter things like strikes and unemployment and lynching and racism in the South, which is some of what we see on view. Some of the other prints in the gallery are supposed to be funny. And so that's the tension I've tried to set up by having these groups of prints facing one another.
Tell us about the one that's sort of in the middle of this wall. This one's really arresting. It's Mabel Dwight in the crowd from 1931.
I think this one is great because what we see are 6 people standing very close together as if they're waiting for a bus or as if they're waiting to cross the street. And if you look, we see people that, based on their clothing and their the hats that they're wearing, seem to be of different occupations. So we have a man who looks fairly wealthy, and he has his pocket watch and a suit and tie next to people in plaid shirts and hats that seem more like workers. And then we have two women who it's hard to say who they might be, but they could be office workers, which was kind of a new occupation for women, to be these kind of office girls or shop girls who are going to work. They're looking at one another, they're looking to the side, they're looking back at us, and so we are implicated in this network of gazes, which Mabel Dwight often does very effectively, I think.
Show us one of the funny ones.
So this one, also by Mabel Dwight, is quite funny. Yes, and so this is in an aquarium, so this is another public space. So Mabel Dwight often shows everyday people and everyday occurrences and the funny things that can result from that. And so here we see some figures at the aquarium. The print is called Queer Fish because we're looking at these strange beings in this aquarium. So a very large fish.
Who seems to be studying this very strange man off to the right.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something going on here. So they are both kind of suddenly encountering one another and looking at each other, and each of their jaws drop. So the facial expression of the man echoes the facial expression of the fish. And they're each finding one another to be very strange and surprising. And so this was a very popular print. So Mabel Dwight made this in 1936. In 1937, she sold at least 100 prints of this image. So people liked this and wanted to own it and buy it. And it was one of Mabel Dwight was a very successful printmaker of the 1930s, and this was one of her most popular prints.
For the more political artists, were they in support of Roosevelt's New Deal? Which way did they lean? What kind of themes were they going for?
I think that's such a great question. So these are artists who I'm sure they each have different views individually. And what's interesting about this project is to ask exactly what you've asked. To what extent are these artists able to be critical? Can they be critical of the government who is paying them to make these objects? To what degree is there any censorship? To what extent are they self-censoring? So do they have a sense themselves that certain subjects would not be appropriate because of who their employer is? And I think they're each walking that line in a different way. But we see some very critical and disturbing images. So the Philip Reisman, he applied for money to make a trip through the South. And the print that resulted, the title of which is South, shows a lynching, a chain gang, and some members of the Ku Klux Klan. So it's a very disturbing, critical image. And this image was shown in an exhibition called Struggle for Negro Rights. So there, this is an entire exhibition that, again, is meant to change people's minds and to get people thinking about what's going on and to take action about these things. So these artists want to effect change through the work that they make.
The print next to it, Low Tide, looks like it also has a point it's trying to make.
Yeah, so here we see a group of men kind of huddled around a fire. The print is called Low Tide. In the background, we see some factory buildings and a smokestack. It seems to be at night, and we see these kind of vacant expressions and hand gestures of the men. And this is probably a group of unemployed men possibly they're also homeless. So why are they all gathered here around the fire late at night? That's what Harry Gottlieb is inviting us to think about.
Historically, or traditionally, were artists always this politically involved or engaged?
I would say in the United States, in the 20th century, this is a special moment. For sure. But throughout art history and the history of image making, I think artists are often responding to what's going on in their contemporary moment. And as art historians and as curators, we try to see how they're doing that and to what extent that is very visible on the surface, or sometimes is it more coded? Do you have to do a little bit more unpacking of the imagery to see what their commentary is?
Now, right behind you there, it looks like, yeah, something has happened down in the mines, and that was such a fertile area for so many different kinds of artistic expression. Why don't you tell us about this one?
I'm glad you asked about this one, because in the exhibition here, we have a number, like I said, the Mabel Dwight prints. Mabel Dwight's very well known, and her work is very well known. There are also some WPA artists, including Julia Rogers, who created this print, The Mine Disaster, who we really do not know much about at all. So the imagery here we can see is, the title is Mine Disaster, and we see a group of miners with their headgear on, carrying someone on a stretcher who
doesn't look good.
Yeah, let's hope maybe he's going to recover, but he may have also died. And so this is and we're kind of positioned, you know, he's horizontal there on the stretcher, right in the middle of the canvas. So it's a very somber image for sure. But Julia Rogers is someone that we need to do more work on. We just don't know a lot about her.
Is there a lot of her artwork that people have? Or, I mean, maybe not in the university collection, but in other collections?
This was the first time that I've ever encountered her. And that's something interesting about the WPA. You did not have to be a famous, well-known, highly successful artist to participate in the WPA. And this was a time... there's a lot of work by women in this show. This is actually a good moment to be an artist who is a woman in America, because at a time when the commercial market was not really open to work by women artists, and still work made by men fetches higher prices than work made by women. But on the WPA, everybody makes the same salary, and you don't have to pass any aesthetic test. You just need to be an artist that needs to work and get paid for doing so. And so we see a lot of work by women being made under the WPA.
I think what also is so striking about this image is that it seems like it has some religious undertones as well. Oh, yeah. At least I that was sort of my first reaction. They have the figure in the back whose head is covered, who seems like, you know, the mourning figure of Mary in so many images of Christ's death. And so we have a number of artists in this exhibition who seem to be sort of building on those similar themes in the history of art, but with this much more explicit sort of political or social commentary.
We see that certainly in the Migrant Mother, who follows in a long tradition of the Madonna and Child images. So some of the same iconography or figures that we're familiar with from art history are being repurposed for these new contemporary uses.
What are those guys doing in that print that's right behind you?
That is a print by Elizabeth Olds. It's called Sheepskinners. And so Elizabeth Olds is working in Omaha and in a meat processing plant. And this is one of a series of images that she made. So yes, it's very striking and gruesome. So we see these, okay, so from a vegetarian, we see these animals hang, you know, the bodies of these animals hanging on these hooks and men using their knives to skin the sheep. And that's something that she is showing us in this print.
What's this one? Looks really dark.
Kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Right?
So artists are not only responding to what's going on domestically in the United States, they're responding in the 1930s to what's going on globally and this moment of the rise of fascism in Europe. And so these are gas masks in the 1930s. This is an echo of World War I and what happened then. And it's a bit of an anticipation and a provocation to ask, where are we going next? So this is the advent of World War II, when civilians are now dying in these massive global conflicts. And so we see people and even two children putting on these disturbing masks in preparation for what is to come.
So would something like this be published in a popular magazine?
That's a good question. So a lot of these images, they were shown in the in these exhibitions that had political themes. They were also reproduced in magazines like The New Masses and other kind of leftist or communist publications, alongside text and articles about what was going on. So people would see these images as part of a magazine or a newspaper, and they would read about global events and see these images at the same time. So again, that's very different from seeing them the way we are today in an art museum, kind of taken out of those early contexts.
Let's go to the other room, Machine Age Environments.
All right, which one of these is your favorite?
That is a very good question. I know my answer. So my favorite work in this section of the exhibition, which is called Machine Age Environments, so the thought in this group of work is showing how industry and machinery and things like skyscrapers and bridges and trains and dams are reshaping our cities in America, but also the landscape. So my favorite image in this section would be the photograph over here by Bernice Abbott of two men under the elevated train. So we see two people in the city street, and above them is this geometric structure, and this is the support for the elevated trains that would run through Manhattan. So this is the place where the 2nd and 3rd Avenue lines meet, and they cast this really interesting pattern of light and shadow onto the cobblestone streets. And this is actually in 1936, old technology. So elevated trains are coming down and they're being replaced by subways. But if you ever go to New York City, you may know that the 2nd Avenue subway line, which was to replace this elevated line has only recently opened. So the elevated trains came down in the 30s and 40s. The Second Avenue line is only now working in 2017. I think it opened late 2016. So this is part of a series of photographs called Changing New York. So in this image, we certainly see New York City changing, and that happening in its physical fabric as a way to show what was happening in its social fabric. In the gallery are eight prints by Louis Lozowick, and he's a very interesting person. So he's born in Russia, and so he's an immigrant. He goes to Ohio State University. He enlists in the army during World War I and fights for the U.S. And then when the war is over, he goes on a bus trip. So he travels to cities like Seattle, Chicago, and he goes to Minneapolis. And he really is taking in everything he sees in the country. So in the print of Minneapolis, we see these cylinders that are kind of stacked on top of one another in this cubist use of space. And those are grain silos. So we do see a reference to agriculture there. But in these other images, these are, one of them is of the Con Edison plant. So these are tanks of gas and other kind of industrial structures and smokestacks. And Lozowick worked briefly for Con Edison. So he was very familiar with these plants.
What's the last one in that series? Because it's really interesting textures to the far right.
So these two prints are by an artist who was working for the WPA. His name is Adrian Clem. And they're stages in the construction of the Boulder Dam, which we also know as the Hoover Dam. So the work on the left shows a spillway where if the water levels would rise too high, it would fall down in the spillway. What we see here are these forms that the concrete would be poured into to create that massive structure that we know today. So when the Hoover Dam or the Boulder Dam opened, it was the largest dam and hydroelectric power plant in the world. It was also the largest use of concrete in the world. And so it becomes a real symbol of American ingenuity and engineering to create this massive concrete structure in the desert.
What would you say is the most powerful political message or theme that's coming across in this time period?
I think for me, the thing that's most interesting is the way that all of the 23 artists in this show chose to respond in a different way to what they were seeing. And they did that both in their subject matter. So what did they choose to represent? But also, how were they going to do that? So do they use more abstracted figures? Do they try to work more naturalistically or representationally? So I think it's interesting to see that even though they're all working for the same employer, they're all living under these same conditions, they come up with this vastly different array of responses. And that's what I think really comes through in the exhibition.
Well, Ashley, this has been great. Thank you so much for letting us come up. And Carly Wurzelbacher, the curator of this exhibit, thank you so much for taking us on this tour. But Ashley Reichelbeck, would you please remind everybody about university museums?
Sure. So university museums are open on Wednesday from noon to 8 p.m., Thursday through Sunday from noon to 5 p.m. They're always free and open to the public, and we'd welcome you to come visit. You can also find information about our current exhibitions on our website, udel.edu/museums, and you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Excellent. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and do not necessarily reflect the official views of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archived episodes, visit our website, www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM. WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark, or online at wvud.org.